Welcome to WebRush, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
All right, welcome back to WebRush. This is episode 131. And today we're all talking about a topic we recently covered. We're going to cover it at a new angle today. Visual note-taking using technology is the new angle we're going to attack. And today I've got my co-hosts Ward Bell and Craig Shoemaker with me. How you both doing?
Doing great, thank you.
That was great in stereo. That's, you know, we've done 131 episodes. We've never done that before.
And a one and a two.
It takes practice, you know.
This is also our first live video, live audio version of the podcast. So this is going to be live streamed out there up on YouTube and possibly other social media channels. And then we're also going to record this one as an audio-only podcast for our regular listening channels up on Apple and Spotify and TuneIn and the 700 other ways that we send this podcast out to you all and that you listen to us. So. Ward, I think you have some special comments to make before we get started.
Well, you know, we couldn't be bringing all of you this wonderful content if it weren't for our sponsors. They are Narwhal, AG Grid, and my very own Idea Blade. So thank you, sponsors. And let's go do a show. John.
So today we have our special guest on of Doug Neal, who I've been watching on his Verbal to Visual YouTube and I think Vimeo channels prior to that for a couple of years. He and Mike Rohde were the two folks who I have leaned on most in learning how to do sketchnoting and evolving from pen and paper, which I still prefer, over to using technology, which is this show is all about. So Doug, thank you for joining us today.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me on as a guest.
Yeah, you know, we're really thrilled about this. And it's fun for me because I have very little artistic ability. And getting into this, I went through the same motions and stages as most people learning to do this. And I found that watching your videos, you seem to make it very easy in my mind of how to start getting into this with, you know, just saying, look, can, you know, as Mike Rohde would say, who's for those listening out there, check out a podcast we did about a month ago with Mike Rohde. He's got these five basic shapes that he follows through, right? Line, a dot, a square, a circle, and a triangle. If you can draw those things relatively
then
well.
You can draw those things.
Yes. Then you can put those things together and make things on top of things. But it seemed to work out. What I like the most is about what you did with the training is that you really started from the beginning and you didn't make any assumptions other than the fact that you wanted to try this. So kind of tell me about how you got into this and why you did this. And what is the point of verbal note-taking, visual note-taking?
Well, I think my journey into this world mirrors yours in a lot of ways. In that, you know, prior to getting into sketchnoting, I didn't and still really don't consider myself to be artistic. I really wasn't like a drawer or a doodler in school. I remember like pretty distinctly after second or third grade, once drawing assignments stop being a part of your classroom experience, that phases out like real quickly. And then there's just such a heavy dependence on verbal processing and communication through, you know, writing and essays and all that sort of thing. So for me, it wasn't until grad school. I went to school to become a middle school and high school teacher, focusing on the subjects of math and physics and English as a foreign language. And in that experience, I got exposed to graphic organizers and kind of a mind mapping tool called Inspiration. I think it was a software that was out there. And that's when I started kind of being drawn toward this world of visual thinking, of capturing and processing ideas, using things like mind maps and quick sketches. So like that experience in grad school was a little bit of like a primer in that direction. But then after doing a bunch of substitute teaching and kind of realizing that going into a full-time teaching gig wasn't a path I wanted to go down, I was kind of exploring, watching a lot of TED Talks, and came across a real short one from Sonny Brown called Doodlers Unite, which basically kind of just lays out the power of doodling as a thinking tool, as a storytelling tool, that it doesn't have to be artistic. You can communicate with simply drawn images. And I think that I was primed for that. And like when I saw that, I was kind of excited to dive deep into this world of visual thinking, and eventually came across terms like graphic recording and sketchnoting, like Mike Rohde's books and the various work that he's done. And for me, I think what that represented was just a more creative way of working with ideas, that to get to like the benefits of doing this in any format, it just helps you tap into the visual processing powers of your brain to complement the verbal processing powers. So words are powerful, like verbal communication and verbal storytelling is powerful, but you're still only accessing part of your brain. But when you start to sketch things out in any format, that's when you access more of kind of what your brain is capable of. And the hope is that through sketching out ideas, in addition to writing down ideas, you can get to more clarity around whatever it is that you're working on, make plans that you understand, kind of see, be able to do this back and forth between the big picture and the details. Those are the reasons that I get excited about sketchnoting, and it's a little bit of my kind of pathway to this work.
So John, one of the things I like about AG Grid, which is a data grid component for the kind of complex grid scenarios that we encounter all the time in enterprise apps, one of the things I really like about it is that it works for a variety of frameworks, Angular, React, Vue, or just vanilla JS. Does that ring a bell for you?
Oh, it really does. There's all these different companies that I work with where they have no choice but to use a lot of these different tools because they have different teams working on them. So being able to port their code or share that code and that technical investment they have is really important to them.
Yeah, well, it's important to us. Ideally, we're a consulting company, and you know, we never know what our client's going to want to use, Angular, React, or Vue, but they're all going to need a grid, and it's great to be able to reach for the one grid that works everywhere, AG Grid.
You know, at any size company too, because you could have these teams that maybe they only use one framework, but eventually they're going to switch to another one, and be able to take that investment again and use it, reuse it, is really nice.
So if a multi-framework grid makes sense to you, you should certainly go over there and check out AG Grid at ag-grid.com and tell them Warden John sent you.
So kind of in line with everything you outlined there, do you feel like there's a different way of thinking or a different way of organizing your thoughts, even before you begin to put anything on paper? Like, is there a shift in mentality that you had to make in order to really make this become fruitful for you?
In some ways, I think the starting point is probably the same as it's always been. That's this filtering process. Whatever you first capture, whether you're like dumping ideas out of your own brain or learning something from a book or a podcast or whatever it may be, like the first step in that process is deciding like which of this information is worth capturing in some form. And I've kind of homed in on like a good starting point for me is like a simple bullet point list. Like get those ideas down quickly. is often the starting point. And then like, as I am jotting those ideas down, I'm starting to think of like, okay, what's an organizing structure for these ideas? Would they best be represented in a flow chart? Maybe like a mind map where there's like a main topic in the center and you branch out to different details from there. If there's like a specific story or a real strong visual, maybe it's a single scene of some sort that kind of represents that topic. And within that one image, that might be like a container for all of these details. So that's kind of what my process looks like. And what I like about that is it has a very approachable starting point. Like, you don't have to go straight to drawing things. You can if you want to, but you can start first by just that kind of filtering process, and kind of give your brain the space to kind of think about the organizing structure as you go. And that's almost like a second stage of the process.
So, Doug, you seem to be talking about sketching for presentation, as opposed to sketching in taking notes. Is that fair to say, what you were just talking about there?
I hadn't made that specification in my mind. So I think that process that I described can work for any purpose.
Because when I'm, you know, I mean, I went to grad school too, which means I wasted many years in academia. They were great years, though.
What did you go to grad school for?
Well, because I'm a software developer, I went to grad school for sociology, of course. you know, and I decided that the sociologists were making so much money that it was really time to give up on that and go into a lower paid profession like software development. But you know, one of the things though is you spend a lot of time trying different note taking strategies. And the big worry is that especially when you're an undergraduate, you start like yellowing every line and writing down every line. And so you have a hard time trying to decide, am I listening to what the person is saying or am I taking notes? And my big fear with sketchnoting would be that I would be perfecting my drawing while missing what was going on. So tell me how you cope with that.
Yeah, that's a common fear and common struggle with folks who get into sketchnoting, and particularly folks who want to do it in a live setting, whether it's like a lecture or a workshop or a meeting where, you know, you can't pause the information. The information is going to keep coming.
Exactly.
And in those situations for me, I kind of like, I have two approaches for that. One is more or less what I just described, like, okay, just as you're taking notes, don't worry about the visuals, just do this like bullet point, quick capture. But to get, I think, to a more meaningful capture right away, that's when I lean toward the mind map format. So like a mind map is this flexible tool where you maybe start in the center of your page with the topic of that meeting, of that lecture, of that workshop. And then as different subtopics come up, you kind of branch out radially from that center. Capture those main ideas, even if it's just in like short words and phrases with like boxes and connector lines. So the mind mapping process is much more about mapping out those connections between ideas, which for me is often just as interesting as trying to come up with like a sketch, like an icon or some sort of sketched out scene. So in those live settings, like, I try to have kind of a relatively stripped down process that's quick and flexible. And then throughout that process, if there's like a lull in whatever's coming in and I want to spend a little bit more time on like this branch of the mind map and like add some sketches to it, you can do that during a lull or after the fact. So that's kind of how I cope with the pace.
Does your mind map often become your sketch, or is it sometimes your like rough draft?
Good question. Often it becomes the sketch. This has varied a little bit now that I'm using a digital approach first. I've been using the iPad Pro with the app Concepts that has this infinite canvas to it. It's vector-based, so you can move things around and resize, change colors, even change like brush stroke styles as you go. So often what I'll do is start with this mind map approach, build it out as quickly as I can live, and then maybe right after the meeting or once the information flow stops, spend maybe another like 10 or 15 minutes tidying things up a little bit, just like paying attention to spacing, maybe adding some connector lines that I didn't have time to before, maybe adding some sketches or quick visuals. But then I let that be the final sketch note that I save as an image to my device. If it's something that I want to share with others, I might share it in a video or in a blog post. Yeah, that's what I find to be a good balance of like not spending too much time trying to polish up the thing, right? Like add those helpful details when they're useful, but don't worry about making it a piece of art. It's meant to serve a purpose. So focusing on like what that purpose is and getting it to the point where it meets your needs as a learner, as a presenter, like that's solid. You don't have to make it a fancy illustration for it to be useful.
I find those different modes that Ward and Craig are referring to as different parts of my brain as I go through this. And I'm curious in how you recommend people to practice this, because if I'm doing this live in a presentation, as Ward was suggesting, like watching a video, like these days my live is I watch a video on YouTube and I try to follow along. There's a couple of things I know going in. Like I know who the speaker is and the title, and I can kind of prepare my layout with that. What I don't know is how much I'm going to learn and want to keep the high points down for. So choosing a layout sometimes, like I tend to default to one or two of these layouts and how I'm going to flow in advance. But you can either quickly run out of room or you end up with these massive gaps on your page. And it's usually one of the extremes for me. Then there's the other side, which I'd love to hear you talk about too, which is you're doing this for presentation. For example, I've used some sketch notes to where I spent some time in advance saying, you know what, this is the topic I want to talk about. I know all the things I want. Let me go ahead and mind map it out, as you're saying. And I use this as a header for a blog post or for a presentation and a slide deck. Two completely different mindsets. Can you kind of talk about how you recommend people approach those different ways of going?
Yeah, those two being taking notes on a live presentation versus creating a presentation yourself.
Yes, where something would be where you know the topic. Like the big difference is you know right. What's coming versus you don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
You know, as John, just before Doug kicks in there, because I think this is an invite for Doug. You were talking about how you were running out of room as you were fleshing out your stuff, John. And I was just thinking that Concepts app, one of its virtues seems to be that you cannot run out of room. It just keeps going. Is that one of the reasons that you are bringing technology as opposed to pen and paper to it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it does. It removes that fear of running out of space on the page. Which is a major reason that I like to use it for live note-taking. And yeah, that pairs well with a mind map structure, but kind of any type of flow, even if you're just going more of like a column approach, like maybe top to bottom, you can continue moving across the screen that way. So that's what that tool set provides. In addition to that, I think what's helpful for folks to kind of decide up front, like most of the way I teach sketchnoting is encouraging folks to make certain decisions about the note-taking process up front, to kind of like remove the number of decisions that you have to make in the moment. So those upfront decisions are often about kind of your approach to layout, and even your approach to like comprehensiveness. In certain cases, you probably do need to like keep up with the pace of the information that's coming in. Maybe if it's a specific workshop related to your job and you need to know all of these things. So you kind of have to capture everything in some degree. So then you kind of need to have comprehensiveness in mind, in which case I would make sure that my process has like, I will plan to go multiple pages if I fill one page and like not worry about how much of the second page I fill, because I kind of want to get most of the big ideas down. Kind of on the flip side of that, though, often what folks sketchnote is something like this, like a 30-minute long freeform conversation, 30 to like hour-long podcast conversation, where the intent going in isn't to capture like all of the details of this conversation. It's to like pull out a few key points that sound helpful and that you want to apply to your work. So in those situations, prior to using like a digital note-taking device where I have that infinite canvas, what I would do is maybe if it's I'd use a large sketch pad on my desk or sometimes like a big piece of poster paper on the wall. And I just decide up front, this is my one page for this podcast. When I fill it, I fill it. And like one filled page will give me plenty of things to follow up on after the conversation. So even if I like don't capture the last 20 minutes of it, I still have plenty to work with what I did capture. And that emphasizes like, it's not about, in a lot of ways, it's also not about what makes it on the page. It's how those marks facilitate certain follow-up action. So like, it's that follow-up action. It's what you do with those ideas. It's how you incorporate them into your personal or professional life. That's ultimately what matters.
And what do you prefer these days? Do you prefer paper or do you prefer iPad technology to do your sketchnoting?
Right now, iPad. I'm kind of in a mode, I guess I've been in this mode for about a year now, of kind of going all in on the digital tool set.
You have an Apple Pencil in your hand.
I do.
So that's kind of indicative
giveaway.
Of that.
Giveaway. And I've got the iPad in front of me. I'm doing very little. There it is. Very little note taking during a conversation like this because, you know, there's dynamics going on. But I have enjoyed almost more than I expected. I have enjoyed going kind of all in on digital because of the variety of apps and tools that are out there. Like we've mentioned Concepts, by far my go-to, but there are a few others that I use for different purposes and to meet different needs. So that's what's cool about the digital landscape. I'm sure at some point I will kind of swing back or like bring in a few analog tools in because there is something nice about like that work mode when kind of getting rid of all digital distractions and just like having some pen and paper or whiteboard and marker, like that work mode
is
distinct.
Yeah, I haven't personally landed that. Like I love the iPad. I'm all about technology and most of our viewers in the show listeners are as well. I haven't landed yet on the 100% tech. And I think part of it is that when I draw with the pencil and paper, a little less distractions, as you mentioned, but the other side is I feel like the quality of my drawings, while it's not the foremost reason why I do this, they are better on pencil and paper than they are with the iPad. At least at this stage for me, I'm going down that road. But the one thing I love about the iPad is the digital transformation. So easy to transform to digital. And as you mentioned so eloquently, Ward, it's so much easier to not run out of room because I'm like, you know what? I made that icon too big. I'm just going to shrink the icon or, you know, it's But there's also that endless iteration then, you know, something that might have taken me a half an hour to sketch in the past might now be a 3-day project, which is also about use of time. Like, is it really worth that? So
that's a good point, John. So Doug, how do you keep yourself from polishing instead of note-taking? Which is the risk I think John's alluding to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's an easy trap to fall into, that kind of endless polishing, endless editing. I guess for me, I might have a couple things that like maybe work in my favor. One is that to some degree, I can get bored quickly within a given topic. So I just don't have the natural desire to spend all that extra time doing like a ton of fine tuning. So there's a little bit of that kind of like natural inclination there. The other piece that helps me kind of move more quickly is that kind of the way I've structured my business and my work is it's built on kind of the regular publishing and sharing of sketch notes, of videos, of the things that I'm thinking about. So I guess I've kind of built up for myself incentives to not like not polish, not get to perfect, get to useful, put it out there and like move on to the next thing. So I think those are a couple of the things that come to mind for me there.
Are you building a web application, need to deliver it soon, and don't have the people to do it? Maybe you're not sure your company has the skill set or experience to do it. And maybe we can help. I'm your host, Ward Bell, and my day job is building applications for companies like yours. I don't do it alone. I'm president of IdeaBlade, a consultancy that specializes in enterprise web application development. We're particularly strong in Angular, RxJS, NGRX Redux on the front end, and .NET and Microsoft technologies on the server. We're a small, tight-knit group of people handpicked by me for their expertise, experience, integrity, and team spirit. Maybe we can help you with architectural guidance and hands-on development. And if there's something we don't know, and in our field, really, there's too much to know, we can draw on our personal connections in the Microsoft RD, MVP, and Google GDE networks, as well as our international circle of really great developers, people we know and trust personally. If you got a project that's keeping you up at night, shoot us an email at info@ideablade.com. That's info@ideablade.com. And now back to the show.
Taking it from the other angle, if you're working on paper, which is what I do a lot, what I've wondered is, people who are really experienced and you know good at this, what do you do with mistakes? Because one time I was doing my thing and I just made this really bad thing. I crossed it out and it just looked horrible. So then I went, no, I can't live with that. So now I have to go and redo it. And like, what's your experience with that?
Yeah, there's a couple ideas that come up for me there. One is not mine. I saw someone else. I probably can't remember exactly where I saw this, so I can't pinpoint the source, but I know someone who anytime there's a mistake, they have like a specific bold icon that they draw over that mistake. I think for that person, it was even just like a heart icon.
Okay.
Like, but I could see you picking something like relevant to the subject material that you're sketchnoting. Pick some icon and almost like a... It's a little bit like if you get a tattoo and then you regret it a year later, don't want to remove it, you get a tattoo on top right. of it.
Right.
So a little bit of that.
It's like your error stamp or something.
Yeah. So like that's one approach. And the other is to within the sketch note itself, like I've done this for videos actually. I've experimented with a lot of different video formats on my YouTube channel. Lately, it's been almost exclusively digital, but for the first 5 years or so, it's all pen and paper. I kind of record, set this camera up above my desk, have this poster paper. I usually have a reference image in front of me. But even then, like I misspell a word or I draw something differently than I intended to. And then I recognize it, like the camera's going. I'm like 60% of the way through the video. I don't want to stop and restart it. So I just like write a little like, oops, and draw an arrow to it, like just acknowledge the mistake within right. the notes itself. And that like takes off the pressure.
I like that.
So either like cover it up with some icon or just like acknowledge it. Cause it's, I don't know, it's real. It's something that happened. It's
right.
Not, it doesn't have to take away from the value of the thing that you're creating.
You mentioned concept apps.
The concepts app.
Sorry. Yeah, I've heard of Sketches for iPad as well. And lately, I've been using Procreate, which I very popular art tool that you've mentioned in the past on your show. But I'm kind of curious why you don't use something like Procreate that is incredibly popular. Is it because it's got too many features, or like what is it about concepts that you really like that drew you to it?
Yeah, I actually started with Procreate, and that was my go-to note-taking app for a while. And kind of what sets that apart is it's kind of an illustrator's tool. It's a drawing tool first. And for whatever reason, many sketchnoters made their way to that app because it is this powerful tool. It's got these different brushes that you can use. You've got these different layers to kind of separate maybe different aspects of your sketchnote. I enjoyed that app for the entire time that I was using it. I think what made me end up switching to concepts were things like the infinite canvas. So Procreate does not have an infinite canvas. You kind of set your artboard size and then you go with it. Concepts is also like vector-based by default. So as far as like moving around and scaling and doing those things, Concepts facilitates that a little better. I can't remember. Procreate might have certain brushes within Procreate, might be vector-based. Others might be pixel-based.
Can you explain why vector-based was interesting to you?
Yeah. So it all comes down to that editability piece where if it's vector-based, because, I mean, your listeners probably know all of this, because there's like code that describes the stroke, you can adjust like the features of that code to make that stroke bolder, change it from black to blue, totally resize it, rotate it. And as you do all of that editing, you don't lose any quality. There's no fidelity loss like in the sketch itself. Whereas if you do that, if you, you know, are on Procreate and you pick something and try to scale it or move it, it gets all pixelated. So that's why vector is useful for me and why I like concepts. But I will point out too, like with my deep dive into the world of digital sketchnoting and like taking a look at a bunch of different apps, I've kind of like identified a handful of categories. We've mentioned two so far, like one being the more illustrative tool, like Procreate, another being this like infinite canvas vector-based tool like Concepts. There's another one that folks might be interested in that's kind of like a note-taking tool first, and it kind of mimics the pen and paper note-taking experience. Two within that category are GoodNotes and Notability. So those kind of like, they recreate a little bit of the pen and paper feel. They kind of have like a top-to-bottom flow as you go through. And they have, there's some interesting unique pros and cons to each. One I'll briefly mention for Notability is it has audio recording built in. So if anyone wants to focus on that use case of live sketchnoting during lectures or workshops, I'd encourage them to check out Notability, because you can start the audio record and then you do your sketch notes, do your note taking, go through however many pages. After the fact, you can play back that sketch note and even tap different parts of your sketch note. And if you tap something in the middle, it'll automatically like bring the audio. So you can listen to what you were hearing at that exact moment, like when those marks were made. So that's a pretty cool feature to be able to like review the material and worry less about, you know, capturing everything because you know you can go back to it.
Yeah, my notebook doesn't do that. It doesn't have that feature at all.
Probably not. So that's just cool. So, like, to see what developers are doing with all of these note-taking apps and like which features different apps highlight, which features they choose to include or exclude for simplicity reasons. It's a really interesting space.
Yeah, I have to say, when I tried Procreate, which I did right after Mike came on, I went out and got all this stuff, right? Because that's what I do.
Ward likes gear.
Oh, God, it's terrible. But I was quickly overwhelmed with choices, and I realized that this was a tool for people who knew what they were doing. So maybe I would graduate to it. But it was a little bit like picking up the violin because I'd heard somebody else play the violin, and I thought, hey, how hard can it be? So would you say that some of these others are more like a kazoo, which is where I belong?
Yeah. No, I think those two that I mentioned, Good Notes and Notability, are great for starting to sketchnote in a digital environment, because in that case, like, what's great about those two apps is that for the most part, like, you just have this one toolbar at the top, and like, I think it's easier to understand. It's easier to pick up and run with from the get go. There are less like sub menus to dig into compared to Procreate. And I think even compared to Concepts too, probably. So yeah, you might try those and see if you like that.
I find myself gravitating more and more towards technologies that are like a kazoo.
I'm going to interrupt for a sec. I have to ask you something that I've been dying to ask you. And I'm going to share my screen for a moment, but I want you, Doug, to tell people what I'm sharing and tell us how, more importantly, you actually achieved this. So I'm going to share my screen as a surprise here to everybody. We didn't mention this. All right. This is, I assume, your hand drawing a sketchnote live on your YouTube channel. Reminds me of the first time I ever saw this was probably a decade ago. UPS did one of those commercials where they actually live sketchnoted a UPS drop-off process. Like, what can Brown do for you? It was a great commercial. And I remember the whole thing. And I just advertised for UPS and they're not paying me at all. But how do you pull this off?
Yeah. So that setup is all pen and paper. So I kind of wish I could like grab my webcam and just like turn it around and point it in this direction right now.
Now, if you were Ward, you could do that. He's got like 90 cameras in his office at this point.
They're all broken though.
So with that video, I basically have a camera set up above my desk. And, you know, you could do a fancy tripod to get it there. Right now, just because of the room that I'm in, I have a kind of like shelf that I drilled into the like crossbeam so that there's this space where I can clamp things to that's literally like right above kind of my desk space here. So I get, and it's this camera specifically, actually, it's just a DSLR, it's a Canon T5i. So this is like probably a decade old now, but it works. Get this set above the desk recording, a couple of lights on either side. And then that's just a big piece of poster paper. I kind of have like at art stores, you can get these big pads of paper that are, I don't know, something like 34 inches by 20 inches. So they more or less like fill up my entire desk here. And for videos like that, I typically will kind of draft what I want to sketch out. And once I feel pretty good about what I've drafted, I kind of put that in front of me. So I have that as a reference. Sometimes I even like, if there's a lot going on, I'll number it. So I know like, okay, draw this first, then write this, then go draw this. So I think a little bit about, you know, the order and the way I want to describe things.
I think anybody who does a lot of presentations online can respect that, you know, having some kind of notes somewhere when you're doing more than a few things in a row. absolutely valuable. But you've got your hand in this because that's a video camera. When you said you lean towards technology these days, you lose your hand in that, right? Like, mm-hmm. you don't actually lose your hand, but the people can't see when you're drawing with concepts. They can't see your hand drawing that, or the pen for that matter. Do you find that to be something you can replace? Is there a way to get around that? Or is that just not useful? And
yeah, it's something that I go back and forth on in terms of like, what's the style, what's the feel of the experience that I want to create when folks are viewing the things that I make? And there is something that's lost when you don't see that hand, when you just see the marks coming together on the screen. And in a lot of ways, I think I'm still like, even as much as I like enjoy going all in on digital right now, it still feels like an experiment. What I think is gained by removing that hand is that when you record your iPad screen, for example, while sketchnoting something, what I appreciate about that is it like, sometimes the hand, depending on how it, where everything is oriented, like it's hard to see like exactly as the marks are being made, like the hand and the arm sometimes covers up some of the process. So it, in some ways it removes that distraction so that you literally see like the exact way that the marks are made. And sometimes I feel like that's helpful to be able to see that with that level of clarity. It's also a little bit easier to get to kind of like cleanliness and a sharp image and like a white background. So from a lighting and a camera and an editing standpoint, you get to that cleanliness like kind of right away if you're just recording a screen.
I hear you. I've taken a few pictures of things in my books. Like for example, I'll hold it up for some folks here. I did some practice of some icons, and you can see the lighting on this isn't even great just to show it inside of a book. And I was trying to take a picture of it for a blog post to share. And I swear I spent 30 minutes trying to get the lighting right, and the paper still looked yellow, and it isn't yellow. So I imagine the iPad, that removes that whole barrier.
Yeah, it does remove that barrier, but it is a trade-off. And I think it's like a, really it comes down to like a personal choice as far as which tools you enjoy using, what mode of presentation style your audience enjoys. And I think with like experimentation and maybe even directly asking others, if you're, you know, using it as a presentation tool, you can hopefully home in on what works right for you. Or if like, you're like, I feel like I'm just going to constantly be experimenting and I'm going to go back and forth. Like sometimes I tell myself, Doug, just like home in on a single tool and like use it consistently for a while. But other times, I get bored. I like to experiment. And I think that part of like the role that I want to serve as someone who talks about sketchnoting, I'm okay being that experimenter to like test these things out, look for the bounds of any given tool set or workflow, and try to share that with others to help other folks find like the combo that works well for them.
To kind of bring us back a little bit to the process of taking notes, particularly when you're like in a lecture or, you know, something like that. It sounds like having a layout vocabulary as a part of your tool set is something that's really important. Can you talk about like what's in your arsenal, or are there any go-tos that you often use a lot?
Yeah. Specifically approaches to layout.
Yeah, just like, you know, you're sitting down listening to someone. I have to organize all these thoughts somehow. How am I going to put it on the piece of paper? What can I choose from in order to organize it well?
Yeah, this is great. And there are a handful of go-tos. We've already mentioned mind maps. So we've talked about that as a structure, as a layout structure. Another go-to of mine for a long time was like essentially a column by column approach. So I would move like linearly as the information came in, like top to bottom down one page or one column, top to bottom down the next. But as I move top to bottom, like you kind of think about each row of the notes containing like one main idea, within each row, you have like flexibility. Maybe you want to just like write out a quote that stood out to you. So that's one row. Maybe the next one, there is a visual that comes to mind. So maybe you have like a sketch on the left, a little bit of detailed text on the right. And then for the next idea, you move down to the next row. And for that chunk, you know, you get to play around with whether that idea chunk is word heavy or image heavy. So I like that chunking and moving in that kind of column top to bottom way is a nice constraint because you don't really have to think about where the next idea is going to go. It's just going to go below the next one or below the previous one. Riffing on that, like a third option is one that I've described as the brick road approach, where you do that similar chunking, like each idea that you want to capture gets kind of more or less a rectangular space on the page. But maybe you start in the upper left. And then as you go, you just kind of like lay down the next brick, maybe to the right of the first one, maybe below the first one. But as you go, you kind of like place these bricks on the page. And what that's kind of cool, as you generally move like from the upper left to the lower right, you have some flexibility around where you place the next idea. You can try to place it adjacent to the most relevant one that's already there. So that's another way to kind of fill up the space in a flexible way, but there's still some structure to it. Those are probably my kind of three go-tos.
I want to make sure we don't, this is a technology audience podcast, obviously, but I want to make sure we also don't exclude who I feel are probably a large portion of your audience. When you do your videos, for example, it seems like they come from all sorts of professions. Can you kind of just describe who in your experience has been benefiting the most from learning this kind of style of visual note taking?
Yeah. I think it's pretty wildly applicable. And roughly like the audience that I see kind of digging into this tool set and benefiting most from it, I guess I'll identify three. Definitely anyone that's in like a ongoing learning situation. So college students, grad students, folks doing any sort of professional development. But what's interesting, like no matter what your career path is, no matter what career you're in, if you are going to meetings regularly, going to any sort of like workshops or learning new things, collaborating with other people where you kind of have to get on the same page, presenting ideas in any format, like if you're doing any of those things, this is a tool set that at least some components of it are going to be helpful to you. So that's why,
saying anybody who needs to remember anything or communicate anything can benefit from this.
Or solve problems on a regular basis.
Or if you just like to sit in your office by yourself with the lights off and never speak to other humans, that probably isn't the right choice for you.
So yeah, I think it has that wide appeal and not necessarily wide appeal. I think it has that wide applicability. But then it kind of also just comes down to more, you know, thinking about psychographics versus demographics when I think about the audience for this work. It's all about psychographics. If, to maybe bring it back to the beginning of like our conversation today, it's a couple of different routes that I think are the folks who latch onto this and like benefit from it. It's the doodlers, the artistic kids who grew up and like want to incorporate this kind of creative drawing and sketching thing into their professional work. They're like primed for this and can do cool things with it. But then it's also like the non-doodlers, the verbal people who recognize this as a creative skill set that will broaden their ability to think through and communicate ideas and just have to overcome that hurdle of like learning how to draw, just a little bit of learning how to draw and like you're good to go. So if folks are on either of those paths and are like excited by the idea of doing this, then those are the folks who I think should hop in and go for it.
Now, we always ask this question, when are we bring any topic on, frankly? So I have to ask this here. What is your personal recommendation for folks who want to get started? Like, where it can be overwhelming. As Ward said, you grab Procreate, suddenly you're trying to play violin and it's just not working. What's your first step that you kind of recommend to folks?
Okay, my favorite first step.
By the way, answering with watch my videos is an okay answer.
Well, of course, naturally do that. Just watch all of my videos. But I would actually say to, again, put some constraints around it, give you a good starting point, get a stack of index cards and a Sharpie or a Sharpie-like marker, if you hate the smell of Sharpies. Put the constraint on yourself of like each card, you're just going to capture one idea down. And the next time you're learning something new or planning a presentation or thinking through something, capture one idea per card. And occasionally, not every card, for some of the cards, try to draw something out instead of just writing words down. Once you've got your ideas there, give yourself some table space, like move them around until you feel like they're in an order that feels good or there's some structure there and like you can take a photo and that's something helpful. I like that just because of how, you know, you mess up on a card, throw it in the recycling bin. Low pressure.
Constraints, like you said. It's very free form. I haven't tried that myself. That's a great idea. Hey, Doug, this has been really interesting for us. I want to make sure we have time to wrap up and get to our final thoughts. And to, again, thank our sponsors for keeping us on the air. And I hope you all liked this. It's the first time we've done a YouTube, and we actually streamed out to Twitter as well. Not sure anybody watches videos on Twitter, but hey, we'll see how it goes, right? And you'll get the full audio transcript of this. Make sure everybody that you check out the show notes as well. We've dropped in a bunch of links that Doug has mentioned along the way. And Ward and Craig have been keeping up those. Thank you very much for doing that. But our final thoughts for our audience, we like to leave a thought either on topic or off topic. It could be anything that's been going on lately. And Craig, what is your final thought today for our audience?
I'm actually going to go on topic, surprisingly. When we spoke to Mike, that's when I first started just kind of getting into sketchnoting. And I've found that it's really changed a lot of how I interact with content and how I remember things and the process of digesting it. And so I just want to encourage people to give it a shot and to try it out. John's kind of humble. He's like, I'm not really that good of an artist. No, John's an incredible artist. But you don't have to be an amazing artist to really be effective in doing this. So I would say any time that you spend doing it is well worth it.
That's great. And you're kind. Ward, what's your final thought for our audience today?
Well, I've been taking meticulous sketch notes, and that's what I got.
Nice.
So I've got a long way to go with sketchnoting. Also, in keeping with the theme of last week's self-decapitating sea slugs.
Glad I missed that.
I wanted...
Yeah, you got to check out that show.
Oh, man, that is.
We'll drop another link in the show notes for you, Doug. You got to see it.
There's a film that's up for the Academy Award that is actually deserving, and it's called My Octopus Teacher, which is a guy who spent a year and a half scuba diving with one octopus, and he develops his relationship with the octopus. Not sure what the octopus thinks about it. But it is a fascinating study of what can happen with persistence and focus on a tiny, tiny region with an extraordinary creature. It's super, super. And Doug, you're nodding in your head, so you must have seen it.
Yeah, it's great. I really enjoyed it. Super interesting.
Ward is always dropping really good final thoughts that actually stretch us quite a bit. So my favorite one ever was he dropped a video of, what was it called? The pencil sharpener?
Oh, well, the best documentary ever, How to Sharpen a Pencil.
How to Sharpen a Pencil.
And which I thought I thought was a send up, but the guy I think is really serious. And when you can't tell if the guy is making a joke of a how to video or is actually deadly serious, you know you found something.
Yeah, it's like the Bob Ross of pencil sharpening. It's quite the video. We'll drop a link into the show notes for that as well.
I have to show that to my kids. That's awesome.
And Doug, what is your final thought for our listeners today?
I think my final thought would be to look for an opportunity to like close yourself in like a classroom or an office that has like a big whiteboard or chalkboard on it, and use that as a space to think through like the current problem that you're solving for work or like a personal problem, even if it's just like words and boxes and lines. Because what's great about that type of scenario is that when you let yourself like move back and forth around a room, see the thing from different angles, I think that can bring some clarity no matter what you're working on. So I guess as a Another workflow to try out, that's one that I have found to be powerful over the years.
Thank you. And I'll drop as a final thought today two different ones, both related to the show, not about octopus or pencils. The first one is Doug is being very humble about his videos. I searched quite a bit for a long time to find some way to learn. And I like to learn sketch noting through videos, frankly. You can read about it, and I've got Mike Rohde's great books, but I found the real light bulb went on for me when I tried it and I watched and I paused the videos. And I found the clarity and the, quite frankly, you can do this aspect of Doug's videos are just so good that I bought them years ago when he put them up on, I think, through Vimeo on his website. And now he's got them on a YouTube channel, too, and definitely check them out. Very inexpensive, well worth the cost of investing in it, in my opinion. Second thing is I've got two tips for folks on tools because we talked a lot about tools. We talked about the iPad today, and I do use the iPad as well. But sometimes I want to drop in a paper, as Craig said. So the cheap end, the tools I'll talk first. Pentel Energel pens. I buy these on Amazon, super cheap. They're ink gel, so they flow really nicely. They can run through, like if you like, you never see a kid with a crayon when they start pressing and the crayon breaks. Yep. If you go right to town on these, they will bleed through a little. But I like the blue and the black. I just pick two colors. On the more expensive side, on the paper side of things, I like the Moleskins. Moleskins are a couple bucks for a book, but they're a good combination of you want to get paper that's thick enough to not bleed entirely through, but not so thick that you're paying $50 for a book, because that's a pretty steep investment, and you can, which is insane. On the more expensive side of things, I recently bought, based on Mike Rohde's recommendation, these Baron Fig Kickstarter pens. And I bought two of them, one for blue and one for black. They're a little more expensive, but I find the ink refills, and they work really nice in the pages. And I also bought some Copic markers. I bought a pack of 10 grayscale colors. Yes, there's many shades of gray. Not 50, but 10. So going through there, we can just color in the whole thing and it works
and
good.
And you whip those things out, don't you, John? You just whip it.
And I'm going to move right past that comment. But yes. So the Copic markers, I think I spent $25 for a set of 10, maybe $40. I don't know. They're a little pricier, but you can easily get into this with any pen, any piece of paper. You don't need these tools. For me, the book was important because when you start drawing on lined paper, which is where I started, and I think, Craig, when your first couple ones you shared with me, they're on lined paper, it kind of distracts, in my opinion. And you kind of feel like you're trying to force yourself into these lines. Whereas in the plain paper books, or I use Field Notes sometimes, which are super cheap books, they have those little light dots. Mm-hmm. They work really, really well. And you've got the Field Notes book, Warp, showing up?
Yeah, that's what I'm showing on screen here, kind of, for those who can see it, with the little dots. Because why? because you told me to.
And those are great.
I love work. I love those, that dot grid paper, because like they're there when you need them, but they are kind of like easy to ignore when you don't.
Kind of fade out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of fade away, wash away, which is nice. So there's plenty of
options.
These
are dirt cheap. This field notes thing is dirt cheap. So I leave them all over town.
And they fit in your pocket, which is great. So I always like to leave some tool ideas. There's so many you can choose. Don't let somebody tell you there's a special tool you have to have. It's just not that way. But I'm glad, Doug, that you shared that the paper that you use in that one video, it seems to me, because your hand is smaller than the pencil that you drew. So it seems to me the paper is huge. So that's not a thing I would carry around in a book, I imagine. That's more no. special poster paper.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, thank you all for coming on again. This was great. And Doug, I want to congratulate you on your upcoming family change that's coming your way soon.
Thank you. Parenthood coming my way in a few weeks now. So fingers crossed.
And I think that's going to be a special time for you. And thanks for squeezing this in well before. So we didn't have any emergency departures in the middle of the video on you. And thank you all for listening to us on yet another week of WebRush. You'll hear from us in the audio format every Thursday morning. And let us know what your feedback. Was it interesting doing a video podcast along with the audio? And please give Doug's videos a chance. Give him a shout up on the show notes page. We'll drop them on social media too. See you next time.